Yes, we have with us appearing in town tonight to speak at the dinner meeting of Amicus Incorporated. We have Jimmy Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa, former Teamsters Union president, spent 58 months in prison. Right, Jimmy?
That's right.
I must say, I don't know if I want to use the word enjoyed the articles that were featured in the Minneapolis Tribune.
One's written by Al Stark.
But I got to say, they were stark. Speaking of Al Stark, but they were very revealing. And I guess because they came from you, we all read more with more interest, and I'm sure that right now we'll listen more. Because there have been outcries about prison life, but I suppose we don't listen as closely as we should to those things.
May nice you never be you. Involved.
Yes, I guess.
I don't think anyone who has never been in prison can imagine what it's really like.
No way in the world can a person reading books, watching TV, movies, realize the real, actual prison life that dehumanizes, takes away all of the individualism, and the sheer boredom that takes place of watching four walls, a cell that's 10 feet long, 7.5 feet wide, and with nothing to do.
Also with us today, Judge Neil Riley. Good to have you with us. We talked with you by phone the other day when you were in San Diego.
Right. At a convention.
At a convention.
Of judges.
Of judges.
Yes.
We'll clarify that. By the way, you did pick up a little color.
That's just high blood pressure from overworking.
Because you're always fairly tanned, aren't you?
Right, right.
Yeah. Nice to have you with us this morning.
Say, we do have a number here for Amicus. They were asking about us earlier. We
Good
do
want
to remind you that it's $100 a couple.
For the dinner tonight.
With contribution to Amicus.
Tax deductible.
Tax deductible. $100 per couple, but the number is 336-4036.
And that dinner is at what time tonight, where?
6:30 at the Radisson South is the happy hour around the pool, which is included as part of the tab, which makes it a great bargain. And the dinner itself will begin promptly at 7:45. The dinner will last exactly an hour. We don't have a head table. We don't introduce 9 million people. I'll account for the money they spent on Amicus last year in 10 minutes, and then they get the man.
Very good. And Jimmy Hoffa, of course, the honored guest. You know, I'm sure a lot of people, particularly when you went to prison and while you were in prison, people said, well, Jimmy Hoffa, he's a big man. I mean, he's got a lot of friends. He's not going to be in a cell. I mean, he's going to get some pampered treatment. And then I read Al Stark's article, and from that article, realized that you were just like any other prisoner.
Matter of fact, it was the reverse.
In what way?
By being who I was in the maximum security section of the prison 2.75 years. I was restricted in the number of visits and the letters I could write to 4 as against the average inmate to 12, and I was restricted from any job change during the entire 58 months out of orders and directions from Washington, where the average inmate could change his job each 90 days.
You mean they were, because of who you were?
That's right, and the general argument when I presented it to the warden, the captain, and so forth, was we were doing it for my own protection. And yet, each time that you went out into the yard or in the mess hall or to work, you were associating with the general population. And when I brought to their attention the fact that the majority of the day I was associating with the population, how come it took security in the maximum part of the prison and restrictions on my activities for my protection? And of course they said then, well, we have nothing to say about it. It came out of Washington, and we can't control it.
When you say prison life dehumanizes, I remember reading that article where you said some of the new prisoners would come in that day, and you remember hearing the screams and how hard it was for you to sleep.
Well, that isn't what I said was. I said that the homosexuality in a prison creates tension and trouble, along with the second, third, fourth offender being confined in the same institution with the first offender or young offender, and the confusion brought about by mass rapes is where the trouble takes place and the screams take place, because those kids coming in, and it's very hard to believe it, but it's an actual fact, and if you look at Glass House, you got some general idea from TV of what it is to a young person to be attacked criminally and assaulted criminally with the guards looking the other way rather than to create a problem. So when I say to you that it is without doubt a tragic situation to where young people going into prison are almost always without friends, subjected to the mass rapes and the problems that take place by hardened criminals in prison or the homos.
You mentioned this show. Is this the one that with Vic Morrow?
Yes.
Where
they had the PhD and the young fella.
Right.
He finally jumped off, remember?
Then prison life is much like what we saw on that show?
No. The only point I'm bringing about is that there was the homosexuality. And so far as the tough guy's concerned, and if you remember, there was supposed to be a boss of the prison.
Right.
There is no such a thing in prison.
Oh, is that right?
There are enough tough guys in prison by their own reputations that nobody is going to swagger around and direct and control anybody in that prison. Because most of the people who have life, double life, 40 years, 100 years, you don't impress them by anything, because they've already been through it, already had it, and they just won't put up with nonsense. So everybody more or less respects each other, except the new people coming in, and or the homos, and then that's where the problem takes place.
Now, that threat of violence you spoke about, particularly homosexual
Every
rape, that's something
is there.
People can't quite relate to, the average person, and it's something that hasn't been talked about too much until we could talk a little freer in our society in the last few years.
Well, they've been hiding it. When a murder takes place or a stabbing takes place, if you read or anything about it at all, you may find two lines. But the actual facts are that stabbing is accepted the way of life in prison. Killing doesn't excite anybody from the administration all the way down. And the ever day, ever hour impact of misassociation of people bring about the threat of riots and turmoil in that prison where nobody feels secure.
Go ahead.
I was going to just ask Jimmy Hoffa, how do you answer the things I'm sure you hear, coddling prisoners, things like that, or these are men and they're in there for punishment?
95% of the people who go to prison someday will come back out in society. This is a matter of record. And if you think for one moment that you can dehumanize, take away their dignity, abuse, mistreat people because they committed a crime, and particularly those that are of a nonviolent nature, first offenders, and then turn them back out into the street and expect them to accept society as they did prior to going into prison, then you're not being a realist in recognizing life. And furthermore, you have to recognize the fact that statistics have proven, in California particularly, that if you give first offenders parole, probation, proper supervision, you will have less of a recidivism rate than you have on the present majority operation of prisons or jails or courts, to the effect that they have now closed down 4 prisons in California that have been in existence for a long number of years. Plus, a new prison has never been opened that was built at the cost of millions of dollars. Now, if California can prove that this is the way to handle first offenders and the nonviolent crimes, then why isn't it good for the entire United States, including federal prisons?
We have a lady on the line. I trust she's still waiting, and she mentioned that during your time in prison, she had written to your family. And she's on the air now. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, please. Mr. Hoff is listening.
Well, it is a sort of a personal matter. I was just wondering, if I left my telephone number, you could call me Mr. Hoff, or could I get in touch with you?
Okay, fine. I'll tell you what. Off the air, you give me your number, and I'll have Mr. Hoff call you back, okay?
Okay. Because I just, you know, I didn't want the story to go over the air.
All right.
Okay. This portion is being brought to us by Miracle White, makers of Miracle White non-polluting detergent. That's the detergent that, although it is non-polluting, really works, for heaven's sakes. And you wonder, well, now what kind of secret ingredients do they have in there to make it work? Well, the fact is the ingredients substituted for phosphates are tried and true laundry agents used in American homes for generations. There are no untried, unproven ingredients in Miracle White Laundry Detergent. Jimmy Hoffa is with us today. Jimmy, was it anything like you expected it would be?
Well, our organization represents jails, jailers, prisons, and deputy sheriffs. And I've been in the labor movement since 1932, and I'm not unaware of what happens in county jails, because being an organizer in the early days and even up till now, you're subject to being placed in jails for investigation of trouble on picket lines. And talking to people who had served time, I was not too much unaware of what to expect, but being aware of it and actually experiencing it is two different things. I don't think anybody can experience the fact that when you enter that gate, you lose your name, lose your identity, and become a number. And that constantly the guards try to impress how important they are by referring to your number rather than a name. And then normally, nobody can accept the fact that you can't have, in this day and age, clothes that fit you, haircuts that fit your personality, and the right kind of food and a decent place to sleep. Because we were the first ones to talk about the bamboo cages. We were the first ones to complain about war prisoners and not being, even though they're our enemies, not being treated right. But if you go into the local jail, the workhouse, or the women's detention that I was at just yesterday, then we don't have much right to complain about bamboo cages if we had allowed conditions to exist in 72 that exist in this very town here or anywhere in the United States or the prisons in the United States by overcrowding, dehumanizing, and taking away the dignity and trying to degrade and break the spirit of the people who unfortunately become incarcerated.
We'll take some more calls in just a moment. This is brought to you by Miracle White. And the Miracle White clothesline we have just about every day.
Mm-hmm.
And honest answers to your laundry problems.
Why have my sweatshirts taken on such a dull look?
Well, maybe there's a buildup of detergent residue. Did you ever think about that?
Maybe I've been sweating.
Maybe. Well, to find out, tell you what you do. Fill All your right. washer with hot water. Add a couple of Miracle White Super Cleaner to the wash. Now, without detergent, mind
mm-hmm.
you. No detergent, just Miracle White Super Cleaner. And if suds appear, you do have a detergent buildup. But Miracle White will break it down. A grandmother from St. Louis, Park, asks.
My grandkids are always playing with the dry, the nuts. The other day I found green crayon melted right on the white things.
Well, that is a tough one, Granny, but Miracle White can handle it. First, saturate stained areas with glycerin. Let it stand for about an hour. And then resaturate with Miracle White Super Cleaner and let that stand for about an hour, too. And then launder in water as hot as the fabric will allow.
Write to Miracle White Clothesline, WCCO, for a free stain chart and answers to your laundry problems.
Very good.
Say, got to ask Jimmy Hoffa here, what you think needs to be done then? You touched on some things. But
not only what I think needs to be done, but the Attorney General of the United States, both Mitchell and Kleindienst, the President of the United States, and the Chief Justice Burger have all said that we must recognize that the prisons have been a failure for the last 45 years. And a failure primarily because people become numbers and become containerized rather than rehabilitated or recognize that there may be something wrong with a person who commits a crime and have proper medical and intelligent supervision and prepare them for the outside. So what's the answer? The answer is that you can't take a prison like Lewisburg that was built in 1932 for 950 people and crowd in 1,800 people without adding a stick or a stone or anything to the building, but just adding people. Neither can you fail to recognize that young people, old people are different, live different, think different, act different, and are different than 1932. And yet the same rules that were in effect in 32 are in effect in 72 in Lewisburg Prison or any other prison in this country.
Is that a federal prison?
Yes.
There seem to be a great variety of people in that prison. Violent crime.
From murderers down to people who use credit cards or drive a car across the state line or smoke marijuana.
That's surprising.
Well, it isn't surprising because the very stupidity of the prison system permits it by having a central computer system to determine how many empty beds and where are the empty beds in the prison institutions. And then when they find out where the beds are and the vacant cells, they simply expedite the delivery of enough prisoners to fill those beds, irrespective of their age, classification, or crime, as they did in 1932 by telephone, without having a computer.
How would you have the prison set up for the various groups of prisoners?
Well, I don't want to set the prison up in any groups. I want the court, if they recognize their responsibility, to have a pre-sentence report properly made out by experienced people, not somebody sitting in an office and guessing from FBI files or police files, as to the background of the person and the education factors, work factors, family background, and then by age, classify those people and put them into an institution with other people of the similar or same type background to where they can be compatible as against first offenders, second offenders, third offenders, fourth offenders, murderers, rapists, robbers, armed robbery, where they committed violence, instead of today just grouping people by numbers and by pure quantity.
This was Jimmy's point yesterday when we went out to look at the so-called workhouse. We spent all of most of yesterday looking at the local facilities, and the assumption that the individual who, for example, gets 10 days for drunken driving goes to an institution that's for minor offenders and enjoys that type of segregation just isn't true. We have the most violent criminals out in this so-called workhouse. And as Jimmy pointed out yesterday, there's very little work for them to do and no recreational facilities. So in fact, where we're sending people for up to a year along with the minor offenders is much worse than the Lewisburg, which he adverts in many respects.
Who decides who goes where?
The nature of the offense and the sentencing judge.
But in the federal system, the computer and the attorney general, and the computer primarily, because you're bound over to the attorney general, he in return binds you over to the prison authorities, and the prison authorities are bound by the computer as to where are their empty beds.
Do you as a judge, are judges influenced by hearing people like Mr. Hoffa?
Can I give him that much credit? Obviously, because of his prominence, and because of the fact that his is first-hand information, absolutely. And one of the problems with our system has been that for far too many generations, judges in many instances have not been aware of the facility to which a person is being sent. And the fact that somebody's been there and has access to an audience, yes, it does affect all segments, including judges.
What are you trying to do in amicus?
We are trying to secure for the individual, when he returns to the community, an acceptance that will enable him to start over again. In a bankruptcy matter, if somebody owes a lot of money, they can finally get that monkey off their back so they can start over again and not be garnished every 2 weeks. But this isn't true in criminal law. Once a person is convicted of a felony, that brand stays with them forever. What we do is supply on a one-to-one basis an individual who isn't cutting an angle, who simply wants to be of assistance. That individual, as the designation amicus indicates, simply is a friend and does for the inmate, the ex-inmate, what a friend would do. Helps him find lodging, clothing, jobs, and as much as anything, emotionally helps him by a very tough period of his life.
His link to the outside.
Right.
Yeah.
It's one thing you have to realize, what the judge just said, that the stigma of ex-con precludes you automatically from 57 different classification of work in the United States by having to have and secure a permit to go into those various classifications. And one of the preliminary rules are that you do not have a criminal record. Plus the fact that almost every major corporation in America on their employment record have a checkpoint. Were you ever convicted? Did you ever serve time? And if you check that you were convicted and you served time, invariably, before your probation period is up, you will find that you've lost your job for some reason without ever saying that you were an ex-con. But when that happens, and the individual scouts around town trying to find some way to keep alive and can't find a way to keep alive, then where does he go? Back to people, or back to the origination of his original trouble, and the 70-75% recidivism are the result of returning to prison because of their inability to secure proper employment.
James Hoff is with us, Judge Neil Riley on the Boone Erickson program on WCCO Radio, Minneapolis and St. Paul at 830 on your radio AM dial. It's 2 above 0 in our Twin Cities. It's 11:32. The first edition of the Noontime News will follow Alan Gray at about 6 minutes before noon.
This, we were talking about earlier, about homosexuality in prisons. Now, do some men who have not displayed any homosexual tendencies find themselves homosexuals eventually because they are in prison? And
that's true, but in the main, people who are homosexuals are investigated, determined prior to coming to prison of being homos, and there's a red block stamp on their card that they are recognized homos. Now, in return, though, unfortunately, they contaminate the entire prison. And people being segregated from having companionship who are weak or who are forcibly converted into homos create problems in prison. Talk about drugs for a moment. There's three things you can do in prison. One, you can learn to fight and defend yourself if somebody tries to attack you. Two, you can surrender and take the end result of becoming a homo by being raped, becoming the wife of some individual who wants to capture you. Or you have to recognize the fact that you segregate these people. Now, I have witnessed in my own personal 58 months in Lewisburg what the homosexuality can do in prison. And they live and thrive on excitement. They live and thrive on seeing blood. And they can create a riot quicker than anybody in the entire penitentiary. And they should be classified, set aside, put into an institution for them by themselves where they can't create this homosexuality in prison that they practice outside, or create homosexuality in the prison of those who never were homos.
How do you feel about the family visiting in prison?
Absolutely opposed to it. There is nobody in their right mind who would subject their wives to walking into a prison wall that's 40 foot high and an iron gate and taken into the prison with everybody knowing what she's there for and march her upstairs to a room as though she was a prostitute. And then within a half hour or an hour, have her go back out that gate and have the entire prison population making remarks and comments, which can again lead to great violence. I'm absolutely opposed to it. And the only way you're ever going to correct that situation, in my personal opinion, is to recognize there are values of maintaining family relationship and have visits outside home ever so often, based upon the behavior of the individual while he's in the prison and based upon his past record.
We know Mr. Hoffa has an appointment along with Judge Riley, and time is of the essence here, and we've got two calls that have been waiting, and I don't know if they're still waiting, but we're going to take those two calls, and that's about all the time we'll have for telephone calls this morning. Good morning. Go ahead, please. Hello? She didn't wait. Go ahead. I guess they were patient
they
just
flew.
So long. They flew, yeah. Before you leave, we want to make sure that everyone understands Amicus Dinner tonight begins at 6:30, Radisson South. And ticket information, we have a number for you, 336-4036 for Amicus. 336-4036, right? And you have so many interesting things to tell and things that can be of such value. Are you going to write a book, Mr. Hoffman?
Sometime after my parole expires, I expect to sit down and put in print my experiences, my recommendations, and hope that we can get other people to add chapters to it who I personally have met and know what they were faced with in prison, to where the public will become more aware every day of the need for Amicus and other similar groups to bring people back into society without having them return to prison for another second, third crime.
Very good. Pleasure having you with us.
Thank you
so much for taking time. Thank you, Judge Riley.
Thank
it's always a pleasure.
Roger, Judge.
Thank you. James Hoffa and Judge Neil Riley with us this morning and talking about Amicus.